It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Welcome, all my people. I was trying to come up with, some kind of cool intro, like, welcome, my Money for Lunchers. That's kind of weird, my lunch tribe. I'm not sure about that either. So I'll just say, welcome, my loyal listeners like you. I appreciate you very much. I hope that you're having a wonderful time as you're listening to our program today. I think you'll be well fed for your business as well as your life, because that's what we do here at Money for Lunch. We don't just focus on the money. We focus on, all aspects of life and business and all that other good stuff. All right, quote of the day, coming from actor Gary Sinise. Gary Sinise, you've got to keep taking certain risks, because my priority is in acting. It's not in movie stardom. You've got to keep taking certain risks, because my priority is in acting. It's not in movie stardom. And I love that quote, because sometimes we get hung up on, quote, who we are, right? We're the CEO, we're the speaker, we're the author. But are you? Isn't your life about expansion, about doing more? You got to keep taking risks, because your priority is blank. Maybe your priority is family. Maybe your priority is leaving a legacy. Maybe your priority is, again, insert your blank. It's not the book. It's not the being a star. It's not being a speaker. It's maybe about leaving a legacy, about influencing others, about, doing what you love. Good stuff there from Gary Sinise. All right, I'm excited. Today, I'm being joined by best-selling author Brian Marcel. He is the author of Raise the Bar, Change the Game. Also, Brian Marcel is the chairman of IBCS Group and is the founder and chairman of the International Barcode System, known for bringing the game-changing barcode technology to a part of the world in desperate need for change. Since its start in 1988, he has built the IBCS Group into the top enterprise mobility integrator in Central and Eastern Europe. With more than 35 years of hands-on, high-level, senior corporate entrepreneurial experience, Marcel, known as the Mentorvator, has helped 7 entrepreneurs become millionaires. His goal is to do the same for 10 more people in the next 5 years. Brian Marcel, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Oh, thank you, Bert. Very nice to be here. Looking forward to our conversation.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, so I want to jump into this because, again, you have literally decades of experience. And so I want to talk about advice to young entrepreneurs. What good advice do you have to them in order to position their ideas in a way that will change our current ways of living, or maybe our current ways of looking at things?
Well, I think one of the issues new entrepreneurs have is, what sort of business do I want to start? And they go around looking for ideas that are going to change the world or disrupt the markets. But at the end of the day, there aren't that many new ideas that you can come up with. Most things have been done before. And unless you are an inventor or a genius like Steve Jobs or something like that, I always tell my mentees that as long as they do something they're really passionate about, because there's no good doing something just for the sake of it. Otherwise you won't get any commitment and you won't be prepared for the rises and falls in your business life cycle. So I say, don't get hung up on the idea. Do something that you're passionate about, but do it better than everybody else who's doing it now. And then you'll succeed.
Yeah. You know, and it's interesting to me, too, that there's usually something that you can do different or better than it's currently being done. I mean, we see time and time again that this occurs. Listening to you talk, I was thinking about Elon Musk. Elon Musk wasn't the first guy to launch a spaceship, and he wasn't the first guy to to create digital currency like PayPal. He was just able to do it better. He was able to have these spaceships do something different. And now with the same thing with his electric cars. He wasn't the first guy to start selling electric cars or making electric cars, but he did them differently. He did them better. So to me, that is a great example of what you're talking about.
I love Elon Musk. I've got a Tesla, funny enough, and I admire everything he's done. I think he's changed the whole autonomous car situation, really.
Yes.
He's put the fear of God into all the major automobile manufacturers, and they're all going down his route. I guess he found a good price point and some gorgeous-looking car, which has, got people going and talking about it. But you're right. He's found a different way of doing things, and that's a really good example.
Yeah. I think that one of the things that I like about Elon Musk is that he's not afraid to take risks. And I want to get your thoughts on this as well, because risk is part of life, right? Risk is risk can be scary, but I think that entrepreneurs really are risk takers, right? And I think Elon Musk, when he was doing SpaceX or whatever the space program that he did, he was on the verge of bankruptcy, and he gambled everything on that. On that fourth attempt, and it finally worked. And so I want you to talk about this: why entrepreneurs need to be risk takers.
They absolutely do need to be risk takers. If you think about it, you've obviously got to start from scratch most of the time. And you might already be in a nice, well-paid job, nice regular salaries. You might be treating your partner to nice Christmas presents every year. And suddenly this all disappears because there's no income coming in. And this might happen for a year or two, you've got to come to terms with that and be prepared to go along without any money. And even during the life cycle of the company, you are going to have lots of failures, basically, like I've done in my life. And as you say, like Elon Musk has done in his life. And you've got to be able to face these head on and not panic, come up with your plan Bs, and rise above it. And at the same time, take your team with you, your partner with you, through these rises and falls. So there's a lot more to it than just being a risk taker for money. So before you start a business, you really need to say to yourself, am I a risk taker? What is my attitude to risk? And if I am not happy about taking risks, well, forget it. I don't even start. Don't even go.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Because the reality is that chances are very good you're going to fail. I mean, as it is, they say like, the first 50% of all businesses fail within the first 2 years, and like 80% of all businesses fail within 5 years. And the reality is, I think that sooner or later, if you're lucky enough, your business will fail. Meaning, look at Blockbuster. Blockbuster had a very long, successful run, and they failed primarily because they were, stuck up, or they weren't willing to look at the changing landscape, or they weren't willing to take a risk, right? But for the longest time, Blockbuster dominated the market. So they had a very successful run, I think of 30 plus years or whatever. But bottom line is, entrepreneurs are risk takers. And I like what you said, if you're not willing to lose it all, being an entrepreneur is not going to be for you.
But Bert, you've got to have a vision.
Yes.
You mentioned Blockbuster. Okay, they had a vision, and it was good for a while, but they didn't see Netflix coming. They didn't see that streaming was the way to go. I don't know what their reasons for it were. They must have seen it, but they must have rejected it as not likely to happen, or they got too arrogant with their market position. I don't know, because I'm not there. But we see this happen so often with companies that are dominating a sector, and they don't see the competition creeping up on them or the market changing, nor do they want to adapt. I can't remember what the figure is, but something like 20% of Fortune 500 companies who were in the top 500 20 years ago aren't there anymore. They're just dead. So I think a vision is crucial, a short-term vision, a long-term vision, and a plan B, as I said before, because your business plan, which everybody should have, by the way, I feel a lot of companies, well, I know a lot of companies I talk to these days haven't even got a business plan, and they've been going 5 years, or maybe they're about to go bankrupt, as you suggest, fall off a cliff, because they haven't got a business plan. And I'm absolutely astonished that these companies haven't. But anyway, so you should have a business plan, even if it's just a one-pager, where you should have your vision, and the purpose of the company. What are you in business for? What's in it for the customer? Why should they even care that you're around? And then have some goals, short-term, long-term goals. And this is your business plan and your strategies to achieve those goals. And then you should be looking at it every year or every 6 months and modifying it depending on the market and what's coming down the pipe. And be prepared to change it, and don't sort of get arrogant. And, this is my business. I know it. Everybody loves my products and what have you. And nobody could touch me. And there's a lot of that arrogance around the place. And that's why a lot of people fail.
Yes. And I think with Blockbuster, I think it was some arrogance, right? I mean, hey, we're Blockbuster. We're too big to fail. We're the big kids on the block. And all of a sudden, they had their market taken away. And I believe, and again, I've actually talked about Blockbuster quite a bit. And I think one of the issues that they had is that they had a bunch of old thinkers, maybe not old people, but certainly people who were stuck in the way of thinking that they couldn't conceive the possibility of Netflix happening. And they were not in tune to their market. And so, certainly we can talk about that another time. But again, ladies and gentlemen, today I'm being joined by Brian Marcel, author of Raise the Bar, Change the Game. And Brian Marcel is also the gentleman for the game-changing barcode technology that is so prevalent today. So let me ask you this, Brian, with your experience Let's talk about being a control freak. I consider myself somewhat of a control freak. I do love to delegate, but at the same time, I sometimes have a tough time doing it. So talk about this. In your book, you mentioned not, you know, try not to be a control freak. So give me your thoughts on this.
Yeah, I think being a control freak, well, I have to be careful here, Bert, if you say you're a control freak.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Blast away. Don't worry about me.
Nothing personal. We haven't met. No, I think if you're a control freak, that does go, that is a typical attribute of an entrepreneur. And I know you're a really successful entrepreneur. And by the way, this can be very good. But I think along with that comes the attitude that it's my way or the highway. And if you're trying to run a team, that, you know, you want to lead a team with people who are smarter than you, bring different skills to the table than you have, and who want to go the extra mile for the company. Now, to inspire people to do that, back to the vision, if you like, you need to have this vision that inspires people. But you also need to run the company in a way that you can keep motivating them, to go the extra mile. Now, part of doing that, to empower people, well, you mentioned the word delegate, absolutely, to delegate things to them. Because if you delegate something to somebody, you're kind of saying, look, I trust you to do this. I believe that you can carry out my orders or my requests or my vision or whatever it happens to be. Right. And that is very motivational, empowering somebody to do things. And it also means that you have a culture in your organization that there should be no fear of failing. So in other words, guys that come up with some ideas know that you're going to listen, and it's not necessarily your way or the highway, and they're heard, and therefore they can make a difference to the company. Because the bigger you get, obviously, you can't be everywhere. You can't micromanage everything, no matter how much you try. So I think being vulnerable, being humble, being empowering, anyway, that's the way I run things. And of course, there's seven different types of leader, as Jim Collins, I'm sure you've read his book, Good to Great.
Yes.
So he talks about seven types of leader, and that's just one that I've mentioned. But there are autocratic leaders who are hugely successful. So to me, there's no one recipe. But I think you need to run a company within your own personality and you know, whatever is right for you, but be empathetic to your staff.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm a big believer in delegating. I do believe in delegating. And I agree with what you said. You have to not only motivate people and let them know that you believe in them, you know, I'm just one of those individuals who I like to inspect what I expect. And sometimes I do it quite a bit until I have that comfort zone. Right. So I let people know up front, hey, I'm a little bit of a control freak and this, but I let them know up front, hey, this is what I'm, you know, I'm going to, you're in charge of this assignment, but just to let you know, I'm going to probably bug you a lot until such a point where, you know, there's that foundation of trust. Hey, this guy is perfect. He's doing a great job, or she's doing a great job, whatever. I want to talk about this. I want to get your thoughts on giving equity to your employees or your partners. What is your thoughts on giving away equity?
This is such a difficult subject and such an emotional subject, because you start your company, which is your baby, and you start this from scratch. And you, okay, if you haven't got big investors, because you don't need the money to start with, then you're starting off with 100% share ownership. And as things progress, as the months or years go on, you become very jealous of this 100%. And time and time again, I see leaders who don't give equity away. Now, when is a good time to give equity away and why? I think there are different reasons, different stages. So at the beginning of the company, when you start, if you could find someone with complementary skills that you trust, you can take on as a partner, co-shareholder, whatever you want to call it. So let's say, for example, like me, I'm a visionary, but I hate day-to-day management of people, and I hate humdrum, you know, carrying out business plans and things like that. So I'm not a good executor. But if I had, and this is one of my big regrets, actually, I mentioned in the book, if I'd found somebody I could really trust when I started, I would give them 50% of the company. And but I'd give it to somebody who is an executioner. Well, that's not a good word, is it? Executor, who'll carry out the business plan. Who's the details person? I'm not a details person. I'm a 35,000 foot person. And so I think those two people combined are formidable, because you can't do everything in life. You know, there's so many different types of skills needed in a business. You can't be everything. Of course, on day one, you have to be. You even have to make the tea. But as things get bigger, you've got to take on all sorts of different skills. And then as the company grows and you start having stars, really great people who perform, you want to keep them. You don't want them leaving or being poached by the competition, which is a huge problem over in the UK. I don't know if you have the same thing in the States, but you know, I even have my receptionist with her antennae out for any phone call that sounds like it's a headhunter or somebody like that, trying to poach my good guys. So give them a little share in the company. You know, maybe it's 0.5%, 1% or whatever, or do a profit sharing scheme, something like that, that kind of locks them in, so you don't lose them. So I think those are good reasons for giving equity away. And you've got to kind of have a change of attitude, that it's better to have 50% of 10 million than 100% of 3 or something like that, you know? And then give it away. Why not?
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you. I think that this is one of those situations that is hard for a lot of people. And you know, I think that it's, you know, human nature, you know, hey, I built this company, it's all mine. And you do guard it jealously and stuff like that. I think that's just normal. But I think also, if you are going to really grow as a person, as a company, you have to let other people play. And sometimes that requires some equity. And, you know, and I'm sure that you've met people like this, but it always cracks me up when I meet a business owner who is about to lose his company, right? You know, his company is in a terrible situation. And first of all, he overvalues the worth of his company, number one. And number two, he's unwilling to share in the equity, to give some of it away as an incentive or something like that. Or, you know, it just cracks me up. I met a gentleman who, to date, he had invested like $5 million in his company, has not had any customers, has no revenue whatsoever. And he believes that his company is worth something like $30 million based on the fact that he spent $5 million producing the software that is yet to be proven because he has no customers. And what is funny to me, Brian, is that most likely because the economy is so good right now, he'll probably find an investor that will probably write him a check, or maybe he'll find two or three investors that will write him a check for fund his company and stuff like that. But it's so crazy how people perceive the value of their company, and it's so out of whack from reality. They're bought.
And that's why it's quite good to do the equity bit early. Yes. Because then it's quite difficult to value the company. For example, as you can read in my book, when I went into Eastern Europe, I was looking for, this was before the Berlin Wall came down in 1988. I was looking for people who might have entrepreneurial skills that I could sort of set up in business and do what we call joint ventures with. So when I found them, I actually gave them 51% of the company, hence the joint venture. I gave them money for working capital, and I taught them the best business practices. And everybody told me I was absolutely stark raving mad. How can you give away so much? Especially when they haven't proven themselves. And of course, this was fair comment. But I think what it's proven, because we've been very successful, is that it showed that I had trust in them and they had ownership of the business. And that ownership of the business has made them grow their own businesses out there to the success that they are today. And I'm convinced it's because of the shareholding. So I've effectively got 49% of a much bigger pie than if I'd had the 51%, or even if I'd had 100%. And that's why I'm totally convinced that, okay, it's painful, but if you think long term, this is the way to go.
Yes, absolutely. Well, and I think it comes back down to what you said earlier, having that vision, right? I mean, you know, control really is, what do you call it? It's almost illusionary. You know, back to Blockbuster, Wayne Huizenga, who was the guy who created Blockbuster, He didn't create Blockbuster, I'm sorry, but he's the one who bought Blockbuster and made it this $2 billion monster, is what he ended up selling it for. But, you know, he told me that the most he ever owned of that company was 40%. And then by the time he sold it, he was down to about 30%, maybe less than that. And, you know, he says that, you know, yes, equity is important, but leadership is too. And if I own 51%, but I don't know what I'm doing, then my 51% doesn't mean anything. But my 51% teamed up with your 49%, you're helping me, you're being my mentor, you're teaching me, then my 51% and your 49% become very valuable.
Absolutely. I mean, that is thinking all entrepreneurs should have. There's no question about it. There's so many examples of where that's been successful. Of course, if you're going to sell some equity to private equity companies, then obviously they're going to take their slice.
Right.
And if you have huge capital needs when you're starting up, you've obviously got to go out to the market, and they obviously want want equity in exchange for the cash. But that's another story altogether.
Absolutely. Hey, Brian, we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for stopping by, and I'm so excited about your book, Raise the Bar, Change the Game. Brian Marcel, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing today.
And thank you, Bert. It's all available on Amazon, by the way, just to fill that in. And thank you for having me on your show. And
you bet,
enjoyed
you bet.
It very much.
Thank yeah. you. Good stuff there from Brian Marcel. Again, best-selling author of the book, available on Amazon or wherever your favorite books are sold, is called Raise the Bar, Change the Game. Raise the Bar, Change the Game. Got a lot of great information today from Brian. Love his thoughts on equity, on delegation, right? There's a lot that from his years of experience, right? And I like the fact that he's done it. He's been there. As I said at the beginning of the show, he's helped, I think it was 5 or 6 people become millionaires. He's looking to do it again with an additional 10. Get his book, Raise the Bar, Change the Game, available at Amazon. As always, my friends, let's share this episode with everybody that owns a business that is maybe looking for a different way of looking at their business. Maybe they have some ideas about equity. Maybe they're trying to get to the next level. Let's share this program with them. And remember, you were created.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.